Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome to the show. Nice to have you here. All right, coming up later on, in fact, about 15 minutes from right now, Appalachian State head football coach Eli Drinkwitz. Next hour, Howard Beck. We spent the entire first hour talking NFL. More of that coming up. Hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. And I'll get your phone calls in here. Hey, really quickly. Now, if you know me and you know this show, you know that no matter what, I'm going to shoot you straight. I'm not afraid to put myself out there. I'm not afraid to go out on a limb. I'm not afraid to make that bold statement. Never have been, never will be. Fact of the matter is, I will always say things that other people will not. I will put it out there now. That's how you end up in the Radio Hall of Fame, by putting yourself out there. And I'll stand behind it, no matter how much heat that I get, no matter how unhappy the suits are when I do it. You know, the suits who scratch my check because they hired me to do a job. And damn it, I'm going to do that job. And that job requires that you have some tough conversations, that you have the unpopular point of view. The job requires saying things that are going to put you right in the crosshairs. You know this about me. And either you love it or you hate it about me. Just know this, I don't care. I don't give a damn. I'm about the job. I'm about doing my job. And I'm about to do my job again. Are you ready? Are you prepared for this one? Here it goes. That Sunday night game was not a good game. That Sunday night game was not the best game I've ever seen. Yeah, I said it. Not the best game ever. Not even close. Actually, for quite some time, that game was just boring and a waste of everybody's time. And then Jalen Ramsey showed up. And then the Rams' offensive line showed up. And then Cooper Kupp showed up. And then Aaron Donald continued to create chaos. And that's when the Rams took a 17-7 lead with less than 4 minutes to go. I thought that I would be here talking about how the Rams are starting to finally look like the Rams, the old Rams. And then maybe they figured something out on the offensive line. Maybe that running game was starting to look like itself all over again, especially as it relates to Todd Gurley. You know, like Todd Gurley and load management. Please. Because he was toting the rock. I thought that would be the conversation, but then late that game, something happened. It happened. And by it, I mean Chase Daniel happened. He entered the game for the Bears with 3:34 to go. More specifically, what I mean when I say Chase Daniel happened, I mean Mitchell Trubisky was benched. I mean, he suffered a significant and brutal hip injury that prevented him from playing in a critical game-defining drive with their season and their playoff hopes hanging in the balance. And if you think that he was benched, the Bears would like you to know you've got it all twisted. You got it all wrong. Because apparently he did suffer a hip injury way earlier in the game. The alleged franchise quarterback not playing in the most important drive of the season had nothing to do with the fact that he could not move the offense. And everything to do with the fact that, let me check again here, let's see. Oh yeah, it was a hip injury. A hip injury he suffered in the second quarter. At least that's the story they're going with, and they're sticking to it. Starting with Trubisky himself.
Just, it was something in the second half. One of the hits I took, got evaluated at halftime. Something in the hip region where I was just trying to keep it loose the second half and be able to make plays for my team. And I just kept getting tighter and tighter in the hip region, and I just couldn't move around like I wanted to. And I was just throwing with a lot of arm, and I was trying to make plays and stay on the field and fight through. And just disappointed I couldn't finish.
Is this dude just talking out his backside or what? Or talking out his hip or what? Or just talking or what? Man, I need some clarity there. I really do. How about you, Matt Nagy? You got anything?
We knew it a few series earlier that something wasn't right. We watched him kind of just to keep an eye on him and see how it was. And I had to pull him aside and talk to him and just ask him and say exactly that we needed him to be honest with us. And trying to play through that is what he was doing. And at the same time, it was affecting a little bit of how he was able to throw. And I just don't want to put him at more risk. And I also don't want to affect how the play is with the team.
That was pretty clever. Yes, I saw him speak to Trubisky directly. Of course, he had to. If he didn't do that, then you couldn't say it was an injury. That was the coach talking to the player to find out how he was, allegedly. Otherwise, if you don't have that conversation and you make that switch, then we know what that switch is about. But if we know what that switch is about, why not just say it? Because apparently it had nothing to do with his inability to play the position and everything to do with him not being able to move his hip. I mean, how can you see it any other way? How jacked up and jaded are all of you anyway? Do you really think the Bears were going to bench a quarterback who had thrown... I love the way that's now a thing, Alvin. The bench the salt drop. That wasn't a thing for like a decade. And all of a sudden now it's being played 10 times a day.
Bench the salt.
Bench the salt. Bench the Alvin. What I'm saying is, do you really think the Bears would bench a quarterback who had thrown 43 passes for a total of 190 yards? Do you really think they're going to bench their franchise QB when he's averaging nearly 4.5 yards per an attempt? I mean, those are some electric numbers. And did you see the TD pass that he did throw?
Corners off at the top of the field. Snap back. Another stunt inside. Picked up. Mitch throwing. Right side. Cohen to catch. At the one. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Near sideline. Bears around the board for the first time.
Bears radio. Come on. That's a franchise quarterback right there doing franchise quarterback things. You really think you're going to take that fire out of the lineup for the most critical drive of the season? You think they're going to rip that legend from under center with their entire year on the line? Come on. You think that? Again, their entire season was on the line right there. Do you really think Nagy is going to pull a healthy Trubisky from the game, his franchise quarterback, and give the rock to a journeyman, an ice-cold backup instead? I mean, come on. Nagy, you think he would do that? Do you know who we're dealing with here? Somebody who spent an insane amount of time in the offseason trying to find a kicker, only to watch that kicker shank a pair of kicks in the first half of a must-win game. So do you really think that guy would bench Mitchell Trubisky and then make up some injury in order to cover themselves? Make up some injury just to make it appear that they didn't bench their alleged franchise quarterback in the most important moment of the year. The guy that they moved up to take ahead of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Why would anybody want to cover their ass as it relates to this guy? Is that what you're saying? Because in reality, if that is what you're saying, I could see where you might say that. Like, I'm not saying the guy wasn't hurt. That is such a dicey, dicey proposition always, to allege that a guy isn't hurt when he is. I'm not saying that. I am not saying that. However, I could see where you might question that, given nobody saw this guy actually walk into the blue medical tent. Wouldn't he have been in that tent if he was hurt? Isn't that why they have that tent? Doesn't it seem kind of odd to sub out your franchise quarterback without sending this guy into the blue tent to check out the injury? Did he go in there and none of us know? Did he go in there and none of us see it? Because I didn't see it. And then on top of that, there was some confusion from Nagy over which hip was injured, because he appeared to reference a play in the second quarter when Trubisky landed on his left hip, not his right hip. And then he got Nagy himself saying this.
I got to find out more because I didn't find out the details yet from him exactly the play that it happened.
Lots of erring and awing, and I don't know when it happened. Second quarter, second half, right hip, left hip. Again, also this point, if the guy was hurt and they knew he was hurt, what the hell were they doing with that option call on 3rd and 1 in the third quarter? It seemed like a really weird play at the time, and it's downright asinine if you've got a quarterback and you know he has a hip injury. Why would you make that call? Again, I'm not saying that they made this up. I'm not saying it's fake. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm not saying that Trubisky should have been out there. In fact, there was every reason to bench the guy. In fact, I've been pretty clear about that for quite some time, that it's past time to bench this guy. The weird thing isn't that they benched him, it's that they didn't do it sooner. Again, they would have you believe it's because it was all about the medical and it's got nothing to do with his play. But the fact that he did not go into the tent, the fact that he was just standing on the sideline, apparently without trainers around him, makes it look like a benching. And if it was the right call, and it should have happened a long time ago. But then to come out and say, it's not a benching, it's a hip injury, when nobody watching thought that it was a hip injury, makes it kind of weird. Again, where was the medical attention? What I'm getting at is, you created an even bigger story. Now you've got people wondering if that was a benching or not. Now you've got people to spend the next week questioning about whether or not that was a benching or an injury. And about the team. And about the team's future. Because it was not that long ago that they were allegedly a Super Bowl team with an alleged franchise quarterback and a brilliant head coach. Now all of that is up for debate. It's not just a quarterback issue. And now Mitch is going to need an even bigger universal remote to turn off all the TVs at the team facility. And now you have the biggest question of all. The biggest question of all is, what is the biggest issue with the Bears? The QB, the head coach, or the GM? And the answer to that question is yes. The Bears quarterback is weak. 190 yards passing? Bench the Mitchell.
High blood pressure is weak. 150 over 95? Bench the salt.
The quarterbacking for the Bears is weak. 190 yards on 46 pass attempts? Bench the Trubisky.
High blood pressure is weak. 150 over 95? Bench the salt.
Bench the QB.
Bench the salt.
The QB.
Bench the salt.
Yeah, Rome, we did. Weren't you watching? Okay, well then just say it. Just say it. And don't talk about some hip injury. They're acting like the guy's Bo Jackson or something.
I got to find out. I didn't find out the details yet from him exactly, the play that it happened.
Can I tell you, there are two things that need to be benched. The salt.
Bench the salt.
And the Trubisky. And apparently both have been. I didn't hear anybody running around saying, yeah, the salt had a really jacked up hip. It's salt. It's not healthy. Bench it.
Bench
Trubisky.
The salt.
He's not good at his job. Bench him. Bench. There are two things that have to be benched. The salt and the Mitchell.
Bench the salt.
When we return, Appalachian State head football coach, Eli Drinkwitz. Hey, do you love football? I do. Do you live for Monday nights? I do. Do you love money? I can take it or leave it. Then you better get with the program and get down to Hooters. Catch the game and play Monday Night Moneyball. Right, I lied. I like money. Money's cool. Every week, you are just a few questions away from a chance at making money. Then you can win cash and free Hooters food and drinks. It's easy to play. It works like making prop picks. So who's going to win? It might be you. And it could not be any easier, and it is free to play. Again, you love wings, you love ice cold beer, who does not love the world famous Hooters girls, and there is no better chance or place to get your sports fix. Now you can get in on all the action. If you've got game, head right to Hooters. Watch all the games, eat, drink, play for all the money. With Hooters, Monday Night Moneyball. It happens only at your local Hooters and HootersMoneyball.com. Register right now. Then head to Hooters for every single game all season long. HootersMoneyball.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
We've hit the NFL hard. Let's talk some college ball. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. What's going on? How you living? Where are you? What's up? You have your telephone number. You know where to find me. Let's talk some App State football, to be specific. We are joined right now by the head coach at Appalachian State. First season with the Mountaineers. He was named head coach in December 2018. App State is up to number 22 in the coaches poll. They're 9-1 on the year. They're 5-1 in conference. Next up, they've got Texas State on Saturday. We are joined by Eli Drinkwitz. Eli, nice to have you back. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the Jungle on a beautiful Monday.
It's a beautiful Monday. It's good to have you back. All right, so you went on the road to face Georgia State Saturday night, and after trading TDs in the first quarter, the Panthers scored on a 67-yard TD run. Then they chased that with a couple of plays later with a 34-yard pick six. Suddenly you go down, or you go from tied at 7 and down 21-7. When you're on the road against a good team, that's the kind of inflection point that can swing a game. So what was the mood like on the sideline when that unfolded?
Well, you know what? It all started with our quarterback. He just ran over the sideline and said, "Hey, guys, my fault. Let's go get it back." And, you know, with our team, we talk about every play has a life of its own. And you got to play that play and then go to the next. And it's the culmination of four quarters of playing good football. And if you stack up enough good plays, you'll win the football game. So we knew the game wasn't going to be determined after just those. And we all knew 21 points wasn't going to win or lose a game. So, you know, quarterback came back, settled us down. We got the ball back, and I think five plays later we'd scored. And at that point, I knew we had just settled in. And give credit to our defensive staff. They made the adjustments, and we reeled off 49 unanswered points. I'd never been a part of something like that before. So I think it's just a testament to our guys believing in, hey, every play has a life of its own, and play that play until it's over and then move to the next one.
Eli Drinkwitz joining us. The quarterback you mentioned is Zach Thomas. That's exactly what happened. He gets the ball back, and you go on a drive. The cover 75 yards in just five plays, three completions from him. So he obviously responded. And then you mentioned also you go on that run of 49 unanswered points. So what's that say about your guys that they could be on the road, not exactly clicking, fall behind by two TDs, and then completely turn things around?
Well, I think there's a mental toughness, and then there's just the championship standard. I mean, they understood that there's always going to be ups and downs in a game. But there's that mental toughness that, hey, and like you said, it can go one way or the other. You know, you can either duck your head and say it's just not going to be our night, or you can fight it out. And we got some really good football players, but we got some strong senior leaders. And on the sideline, Akeem Davis, who's one of our senior leaders, outstanding defensive player, was rallying the troops, saying, hey, let's just keep on fighting. And that's what we did.
Now, you and I spoke earlier this season after you went over North Carolina, and the fact that you weren't hoping for that win, you were expecting that win, and then earlier this month, you beat South Carolina in their place. I'm going to go ahead and assume that you expected that win as well. How proud are you of the way that everybody showed up in that particular game?
Well, I'm extremely proud. Yeah, I mean, we set the standard. We knew what to expect in that environment, and we just knew we needed to go play to our level of expectation. If we do that, we would have a chance to win the game. Now, you never know in those, you know, on the road how the breaks are going to fall, but our guys made the breaks. You know, they made the plays in order for us to have a chance to win that game. And I think anytime you can do something that's never been done at a program before or in a conference, to go on the road and beat two Power Five teams, to be ranked, I think it's a pretty proud moment. Not really necessarily for me. I think I'm just a kind of a conduit to it, but for our seniors who have worked so hard and our juniors who have been here so long to put in all the sweat, the blood, the tears to make it happen, it's a pretty cool thing for them.
You actually, Eli, ripped my question. I was going to say, when you've got a pair of wins over Power Five teams and you're the first Sun Belt team to get to a spot in the college football playoff rankings, how much does that mean to you, or is it in fact all about winning the conference and then the rest will take care of itself?
Well, to me, it's all about winning the conference championship. I mean, that's what we play for. We call it a ring game around here. We're trying to get a ring. And unlike, you know, schools with big budgets, we don't get to hand out rings for participation in bowl games. You got to go earn it for winning a conference championship. And so, for us, that's what means the most. I think all of us will look back in time and realize what an incredible season this was, regardless of how it turns out with the conference championship. But right now, all of our energy, all of our focus is trying to be 1-0 this week knowing that if we're 1-0 this week, that puts us next week one step closer to being able to play for the conference championship.
Eli Drinkwitz joining us. We're talking App State football. You know, I know you're focused on what's in front of you, but remember, you coached at Boise State earlier in your career. How many similarities do you see between Boise State and App State right now in terms of making the move to FBS and then taking off?
Well, I think the similarities are first in the culture of the players. We have players that have the chip on their shoulder that play for the love of the game. There's no entitlement. There's no, you know, we're 4- or 5-star recruits. We've earned this. It's all about, or we deserve this. It's all about, we love football. We go to school and we get a chance to continue to play this great game. And I think that's where that similarity starts. You know, Boise's probably got a 10-year advantage on us as far as, you know, maybe facilities and some of the things that they're doing. And obviously Coach Harsin's an excellent football coach. But I think we're right there on the cusp. I mean, our administration is definitely investing in our program. There's a brand new indoor end zone facility that's going up right now that's saying, hey, we want to make this a premier group of five program, and we want it to be a strong program in the state of North Carolina.
And, of course, the investment in the new facilities is always a great thing. You know, this week also, Eli, is the final home game, which means it is senior day. I know you've only been there just over 11 months, but what does this senior class mean to you and to the program?
I think anytime you take over a program and you get a chance to either connect with the seniors or you get a chance to disconnect with the seniors. And what our staff tried to do is really build a connection with these guys. And we specifically stated, you know what, this is their football team. They deserve a chance to go out the way they want to do it. So how can us as coaches, you know, lower our egos and be humble about, okay, these are some ways that we can change and make some progress. These are some things that y'all are doing really well, and let's keep it going. And I think it's hats off to both sides because, you know, a true leader doesn't wait for everybody to buy in. He buys in and tries to get everybody else to buy in too. And those seniors did that. I came in and said, hey, we're going to do it this way. And they weren't looking around going, well, let's see if this works first. They said, we're going to do it the way coach said we're going to do it, and we're going to get all these other guys on board. And I think because of that, we're having the season that we're having. And it's hats off to them. Like I said, you either get a chance to connect or disconnect. And we both chose to connect. And it's a special group of young men for sure.
App State head coach Eli Drinkwitz joins me for another moment or so. Since you mentioned the coaches, earlier this season, some of the coaches started climbing Howard's Knob in Boone. And it's a tradition that has continued and grown throughout the entire season. What is the climb like?
It's pure hell. It's a mile. It's 2.5 miles from when we walk off, but the last mile is 1,600 feet in elevation over the course of that mile. And it is a real beast. But here's the deal. You know, we ask our players to strain, to push themselves to the limit. And I think as coaches, when you get away from that, you don't understand what that feels like. You can't appreciate it. So for us as a coaching staff, we physically have to strain in order to climb to the top of that thing. And you realize what they're laying on the line for you and how hard it is to get your body back in order to do it again. And it's really more of a, you know, we have Toughness Tuesday for our team, but it's really for us as a coaching staff, a mindset like, okay, we're asking our players to give us everything they've got. And we put ourselves to that same type of, I mean, it's not the same as playing a game, but when you're old like we are, it feels like it. And it's pretty fun, man. You got to come out here and try it. It's a pretty awesome view at the top.
I see you working. It's got to feel great to get to the top. Really quickly as a follow. So what does Toughness Tuesday involve?
Well, Toughness Tuesday for our team is just it's a mindset of you got weights in the morning, you got class in the day, you've got your hardest practice. It's going to be a 22-period full pad practice, and you're going to get the entire game, you know, you're going to get the first and second down game plan in. When you get done with that, you're going to have academics at night, and you have to have a mindset to attack that day, and you have to know what it is. Toughness is not something you can talk yourself into. It's something you have to put yourself through and conquer, and we just call it what like we see it, man. Toughness Tuesday is all about being tough, and the teams that can excel every Tuesday have a chance to win on Saturday, and teams that don't excel on Tuesday, that don't have the right mindset, that skip a weight set or don't go to class or don't have a great productive practice, they're the teams that get beat. And so we just, that's what we call it. That's what we attack it. And you train like you fight, you know. So if you train tough on Tuesday, you're going to fight tough on Saturday. And I think there's a direct correlation from being down 21-7 and having the mental toughness and the physical toughness to fight your way through, and also having to do that on Tuesdays.
So glad I asked. Eli Drinkwitz, head football coach at App State. First season with the Mountaineers. They are number 22 in the coaches' poll. They're 9-1, 5-1. Next up, Texas State on Saturday. Eli, great to have you back. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you. Look forward to getting on again.
You got it. I'm going to check out that hill. I want to be a part of that hill. The hill sounds challenging. No offense, coach, but not as challenging as Toughness Tuesday. I think given the choice between those two things, I'm going to hit the hill. I may take you up on that. That's Howard's Knob in Boone. And the coaches are doing it. I like his point that we keep making these demands of these guys. Put yourself out there. Grind. Be mentally tough. Well, we need to remember what it's like to grind and put yourself out there and be mentally tough. He said, no, it's not the same thing as a game. But we need to know what it's like. And it's hell. Sunday. The NFL on CBS is highlighted by a full afternoon of games, including an NFC South clash between Carolina and New Orleans. And the Raiders are on the road against the Jets. It all starts with JB and the guys on the NFL Today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS. I will be back. And my man, Drew Kalisky, is a killer this morning. And I want to say 6:15 a.m. Pacific, he had already given me my assignment for Sunday. Man, you want to talk about a guy who has a process and never deviates from the process and trusts the process and is so consistent in the process? He may be the best producer ever. No offense, Hawk. I mean, literally, in any format. Because Drew is unbelievably consistent and a great leader. And there it is. My assignment already for Sunday is in my box on Monday morning when I know he went hard yesterday. So I will be back in New York this coming weekend and pumped as always. When we come back, Mitch Trubisky. What do you come out on this? Do you think he was hurt or do you think they just out and out benched him? And if so, why not just admit it? I mean, yeah, well, you're not admitting or copying to something we don't already know. Namely, it was one of the worst draft picks ever. Namely, not only did you select him above Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, you moved up to do so. And we're bidding against yourselves. We know all this. Jackson. Do you think that if you say this guy was taken out of a game because he was hurt, that we won't know any of that? We already do. I want to hit on that. I might reset what a bad beat or an amazing cover that was in the Niners-Arizona game. And there's a dude on the roof of a barbecue restaurant who apparently is not coming down until the Bengals win. At least that's what he says. And he's acting like he wants to go home. He's acting like he wants to go home. All that's coming up, but first,
live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Come into Hooters every Monday all season long and play Monday Night Moneyball. You are just a few easy questions away from a chance at cash prizes, Hooters freebies, a new chance to win every single week, Hooters girls to make every game more fun. Play Monday Night Moneyball at Hooters, moneyball.com. This email says, Dear Bear Haters, come on, y'all. They practically had to drag Trubisky from that game. Can't you see the enthusiasm and eye contact under the lid that Mitch displayed at the podium? We Bear QBs are passionate and dedicated team leaders. Yours truly, Jay Cutler, smoking a heater on the stationary bike. Man, I miss Cuddy. We all miss Cuddy. Dear Jim, Trubisky's hip injury is very real. Yours, Ben Affleck's hair. Brett from Buggahaw, wore Randall in the OC. Would have loved to have run Vikes Broncos smack with him yesterday. Missed that guy. Agreed. All right, so let me go back to something. How was your NFL Sunday? Like, I'm curious, how do you spend those Sundays? You watch some games, you have a pop or two, you hang out with the fam, you go to a bar, you go to Hooters, what do? And then on that Sunday, or on any given Sunday, how many of you had action? And if so, by chance, did any of you get down for the Cards and Niners? Because if you did, and you missed the earlier portion of the program, you know exactly what the hell I'm talking about and why I am asking, especially you Cards honks. How you feeling right now? Because there are bad beats. There are bad beats that leave sour taste in one's mouth. And then there is whatever the hell happened at the end of that game. Now, for those of you not in the know, and I'm not saying I am in the know by any means, I am simply here to share information. I'm simply here to relay information. I know what a bad beat feels like. And not from football, but from horse racing. I have suffered some really bad beats. Really bad beats. Like Breeders' Cup Classic beats. Like, I mean, I hate to be this guy, and I'm not looking for sympathy at all. I just want to say that I speak from experience. How bad of a beat? I'm talking like six-figure bad beat. I know bad beats. I know bad beats. I know what it's like to have the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Classic and to get hammered coming out of the gate. So I know. I know. Now, to my understanding, back to football for a minute. To my understanding, the 49ers opened up as 13.5-point favorites over the Cards. They closed as 10-point favorites, but 9.5 in a few sports books or online spots, or so I am told. I don't reveal my sources, but I'll give you a hint. He's got a gigantic head, and he's dry as bleep. And when Hawk tried to get him to get up and go out in New York City, he wanted no part of it. No names mentioned, flight deck. Having said that, the Niners. All right, so they open up at that number. They were down to 10. Some of you got minus 9.5. Having said all that, they were down. The Niners were down 16-0 at one point. Most pro San Fran bettors had already given up. Even when Jimmy G rallied San Fran and put them up 30-26 with 33 seconds left in the game, it was still over for their bets, right? Niners win, you lose the bet. It was a 10-point game. 9.5 if you were lucky. Niners win, you lose your bet. So in other words, two different games going on here. At that point, the Cards alongside the Packers, or again, so I'm told, I wouldn't know. At that point, the Cards remained the best cover in the NFL. So I'm told. Right? Wrong. Roll it, Alvy.
Murray will throw to Fitzgerald, who will pitch it back at the 25. Scramble for it. Ball comes out of there. It's a rugby event. Is that 49ers? DJ Reed takes it into the end zone as time expires for 6 points.
This is the end of the game.
Thank you, Walt Anderson. A 10-point difference.
It's Chris Myers on the call. Oh, my God! It did happen! It did happen! Oh, my God! It happened! Miami in Minneapolis Miracles move the hell over. Make some room for the miracle push. Ball game, 36-26, push! Cards bettors losing their freaking sanity. Unfreaking real. That had to be the biggest kick in the junk ever for anybody holding a Cards ducat. The kind of beat that would make you quit gambling forever. And Niner honks. I mean, wow. Wow. Even if you push, that's got to be the greatest feeling ever. The way that game ended. Just wow. I've watched that highlight 100 times this morning. I still cannot figure out how that ball popped out the way it did. Popped out of that rugby scrum. And how DJ Reed scored. Like, I've never seen anything even close to that. I mean, you have to see how that ball just jumped off the ground into the pockets of Niner bettors to fully get an appreciation for how sane, insane the ending of that game was. The only one more bent than Cards ticket holders might have been the Caesars Sportsbook. According to their director of trading, Jeff Davis, it was the worst possible scenario. A push. He said, quote, "We needed the Cardinals to lose by more than 10 since no parlays lost and Arizona backers at more than 10 didn't lose." He told ESPN in an email, quote, "San Francisco by 4 was no good, but by 10 was worse. We needed the 49ers by 11 or more." Ouch. Clones, let me know. Best push ever or worst beat of the century? Hit me up. Now, just imagine for the few of us, or some of you who had the Niners at minus 9.5. I mean, damn, how good did that feel? What did that feel like to see the end of that game and to see that ball just kind of pop out the way it did and get housed? And knowing that you didn't have 10, you actually found 9.5 and got paid. Go ahead. I'll take that phone call. I'll share the agony or the triumph. Gambling, man. It's a tough game, dog. It's a tough game, dog. Really tough. All right. In addition to all that, I do want to talk about something that was brought up early. Monmouth, Friday night, Kansas, and Monmouth. Why would I be talking about a 55-point beatdown? Because of something not as good as that. Actually, check that. Even better than that. That happened at the end of that game. No, there wasn't some crazy backdoor cover or some bad beat. Just a moment of awesomeness at the end of that game, which I'll get to. But why don't we end this hour with a telephone call? Let's go to L.A. Matt in L.A. What's up, Matt? Snaglio. Matt.
Yo.
Yo, you're on the air, bro. What's up? You know how this goes. You've done it a million times.
My bad. Thanks for the vine. Hey, from North Ridge to New York City, from Balboa Island to Ellis Island, you're welcome. However, today via the CBS Sports Network on the worldwide pedestal atop the throne, I got to say thank you, Vance Mack. Thank you, Jim Rome, for single-handedly changing the game and reshaping the genre of sports talk radio, pimp. Whether it's Matt from somewhere beefing with Gargantuan Gums DA or the B.I. Sleaze, whether it's Justin from Melbourne smashing Gilligan in Orlando or Jeff in Southfield making a long-form clone smack you drama, even on me, the jungle is possible because you gave us all an opportunity to have a take and not suck, as well as to run smack like Johnny McEnroe on a tennis court back in the day. So take a bow, pimp. You are a radio Hall of Famer, officially and for life. So congratulations, Snagger. One last thing, Jimmy. Next Friday, we are having a mini clone stop. Got our dude Hamsky from Tucson coming down. He's a long-time clone and D-alien. Clones in the South Bay. If you're interested, hit me up. Also, if you want some jungle karma, Luis in Palmdale, our guy, is finally getting his kidney transplant. So, just want to show mad love to him, and thanks for the jungle karma, Jimmos, because you were part of that too. You've built an empire of a show and a great community of clones who not only rally around each other, but rally around the jungle. So thank you. Aloha means a hola. War James Kelly's VW Beetle Dome and Twizzler Red Vine Arms. War, it's Rick Eisenhower being nicknamed Sugar Baby Eyes by Eleanor Roosevelt for his affliction to sugar baby candies that he feeds from the Roosevelt children. Unwar Ruffles Crow Sandwich keeping his hands warm between his blubbery butt cheeks. Outro.
Matt's all over the place and clearly was not prepared when I went to him. You got that, Sugar Baby Eyes? Crazy Roosevelt smack. All right, when we come back, we're going to start hour number three. I do want to talk about what happened at the end of the Kansas-Monmouth game. That's coming up. There's some kook up on the roof. A kook on the roof saying he's not going to come down until the Bengals win. Yeah, bro, how do we know you don't like it up there? My thoughts on that, too. Howard Beck at the end of the program, hour number 3, straight ahead.